Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode 124 for March 13th, 2008. This is Chuck Osborne, your Four Diamond Senior Executive Host, who is still getting over the plague, so it may sound like I'm gargling radishes this episode. We're joined today by our Editor-in-Chief, Kristen Salvatore.
Hello.
Senior Editor Logan Decker.
Hello.
Senior Associate Editor Dan Stapleton.
Ciao.
Oh my God. That is a terrible delay.
He's not kidding. There really is a delay.
Yeah, Dan is experiencing like a 4-second delay, so he's living about 4 seconds in the past.
Stop living in the past, man.
It's Wesley Crusher. He's doing it.
Reverse polarity.
Our senior executive intern, Norman Chan.
Only one star here. Or one diamond.
Our producer, Andy Bauman.
Hey, guys.
And today we have a very special guest, Bill Creamy Smooth Harms, who is the editorial manager at Gas Powered Games, and also a former PC Gamer editor who many of you may remember was killed a long time ago by a railgun shot. Aren't you supposed to be dead, Bill?
I am, although due to the marvels of modern science and medicine, I was able to recuperate.
He's keeping very well.
I actually feel a little... I don't know, behind, because all you guys are senior this and senior that, and I'm not. So I'm going to change my...
Would you like to be senior editorial manager at Gas Powered Games?
That's right. Yeah, I just promoted myself.
Excellent.
Would you like to be senior former PC Gamer editor? We can do that.
How about super duper former editor?
I don't know.
You see, you do that, and then everybody around here wants to be super duper.
Yeah. Well, for the longest period of time, I wanted to get my title officially changed on my business cards to all-knowing master of time and space, but nobody would ever allow me to do it.
That's just wrong.
You never asked me. I would have said yes.
Oh, okay.
You get taxed higher on that.
So, Bill, tell us about this writing gig. I know you are not only... a writer at Gas Powered Games. You worked on Supreme Commander.
Yes.
And you are currently working on Space Siege, although I know you can't really talk that much about what you're doing on Space Siege right now. But you are also, in addition to that, you are a world-famous comic book writer. What comics have you written so far?
I'm at least famous within the King County metro area up here. My last big thing I did was Impaler, which came out, 3 issues were released through Image Comics in 2006, 2007. And there's some things in the works with Impaler that I really can't talk about, but it's going to be back in a big way. And, you know, I sent you guys all copies, so
really?
I'm very proud of it. It turned out really well. It was a finalist for the International Horror Guild Award. Which is one of the top literary awards for horror and dark fantasy fiction, which is pretty cool. And it actually directly led to me getting some writing work from Marvel Comics. So.
Wow. Well, whenever I can actually be bothered to read it, I'm going to have to try it sometime.
Do you want to tell us what it's about?
It's about vampires taking over the world. And the kind of twist to
as,
it is that...
As they do.
as they're wont to do. The kind of twist to it is that historically in a lot of vampire fiction, Vlad Tepes, who's the leader of Wallachia, or however you say it, back in like the 1450s. And
he was the original model for Dracula, right?
Actually, that is incorrect.
Oh, okay.
It's widely believed that Bram Stoker directly based Dracula on him. And there's over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, there's actually been a different school of thought about that he wasn't the direct inspiration. But regardless, people view him as the historical Dracula. And in a lot of fiction, you know, he's seen as like the original alpha vampire, the big bad guy, that kind of thing. And actually in Impaler, he's the good guy. He actually does something that's rather quite horrible to himself. in order to fight vampires. Basically, for all eternity. So,
wow,
that's kind of
way,
the gist of it.
Way to bring us down.
It's a very happy, uplifting tale.
It's a light, right?
So
a little light reading.
How is it different writing, you know, for other medium like, you know, comic books and books and you know, video game magazines and actually writing a video game?
It's way different. In some ways, they are the same. I mean, story structure is story structure. You need to have a beginning, middle, and end. But the primary difference is that since games are interactive, that interactivity needs to take the front seat in terms of how the game story is told. So, for example, in, say, like in Supreme Commander, not only does the dialogue from the other characters need to convey information about themselves, who they are, that kind of thing, it also needs to direct the player toward what they're supposed to be doing. And that's something that really doesn't exist in other forms of fiction. And it can be quite challenging because, you know, say for in Supreme Commander, Dr. Brackman is saying, you need to go attack the Aeon and take them out. Well, how do you write that in a way that gets that point across to the player, but also allows Dr. Brackman's characterization and personality to come through? And that's pretty tough. There are also other rules, you know, like localization actually plays a big role in how dialogue is written. Like you can't have characters interrupt each other, because it may not work in other languages. There's timing issues with that. So things like that you really have to take into account. And also the other big one is dialogue length. You know, if you need to pick the spots where the characters can talk, where there's kind of quiet moments, and you really need to measure that so that vital story information isn't conveyed, say, when the player's getting nuked because they're not going to pay attention to it.
How much freedom do you actually have with the story? I mean, is the story pretty much laid out for you by the time you get to it?
In the case of Supreme Commander, the story had already been pretty much determined when I came up here to Gas Powered Games. But I wrote all the dialogue, and I had a pretty substantial amount of influence in terms of the characters themselves, like how they spoke. The biggest example of that is Dr. Brackman. When he was originally written, he just talked like a normal guy. And he's not a normal guy. He's a 1,000-year-old brain in a jar. And so because of that, that kind of informed his speaking patterns, his use of oh yes, his tendency to repeat himself, things like that. In the case of Forged Alliance, that story came about when myself and the lead designer and also our campaign designer, we basically locked ourselves in my office for like a week and came up with it.
That must have been delightful.
it was actually a lot of fun. That's probably
was any cannibalism involved? Post.
Right.
And a similar thing occurred with Space Age. Is essentially the various kind of creative leads, the designer, the producer, you know, the artists, just kind of sitting down and coming up with the story.
Very cool.
Well, gosh, we're all rendered speechless by that.
I know.
We're also thinking about all of you locked in a room for a week.
Yeah, I know. I know Bill well enough because I've worked with him in the same office that if I was left with him for a couple of days, he would start devouring me.
Yeah, there would only be.
Yeah. I mean,
and I will say that there, you know, there might have been a few hours where we discussed and planned for the, you know, forthcoming zombie apocalypse, but we always came back around. So. Sorry, that's
it's
an
always wise
game, guys.
Well, I think Bill wasn't it with you that's where the infamous norm stakes came from.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also and also the 2-day discussion about if zombies attack. This is the old future office with that big atrium and stuff, but there was a 2-day discussion about how one could best get from the atrium to the roof in the event that the building had been overrun by zombies. And much debate about the types of weapons to be used.
So Bill, one of my favorite characters in SUPCOM was the QAI, and he played a much bigger role in Forged Alliance. Was he kind of like a Brainiac-inspired character? And I've seen some interpretations of Brainiac where he's He's kind of the same type of character. But yeah, I really like that character. I'd love to hear more about where it came from.
Originally, he just kind of started off as if you remove the post outros, which were the FMVs that played out after the credits in SUPCOM. Before that, he's just kind of a generic supercomputer, just to kind of show essentially how brilliant Dr. Brackman is. Mm-hmm. But over the course of planning out, thankfully, and this was very good timing and we got really lucky, we actually started talking about the story for Forged Alliance before we finished Supreme Commander. And one of the big decisions that we made was that QAI would become a bad guy. Mm-hmm. And that he would be essentially, at the point he becomes a bad guy, it's not so much that he's a bad guy, but that the Seraphim kind of control him. And thankfully we made that decision early enough that we were actually able to go back into the game and foreshadow that a little bit. Like there's a Cybern mission where you have to go down to Orionis and collect Seraphim tech. And one of the other commanders with you is a guy named Mock, and he, for some unknown reason, decides to install it in his ACU. And if you guys remember, it corrupts him and you have to take him out. And essentially that same kind of thing happened with QAI. And actually, one of my favorite bits of, dialogue in the either game is the post outro where Brackman is asking QAI what he's done, because the voice performance in that is just awesome, and it just totally set up Forged Alliance so well.
Did you have any say in the voice actors or in the casting, and did you have any input in like directing the performances?
Yeah, all the voice actors for both games, I guess I kind of co-cast them with Gary Wagner, who was the executive producer on the games. And essentially we had a PCB, which is the sound place in L.A. that we used to record it all, just sent us literally hundreds of clips from various actors who do anime, commercials, cartoons, that kind of thing. And we literally just sat there and listened to all of them. And then in terms of the voice of QAI, that actor's name is Jack Angel. And if you guys saw the movie AI by Steven Spielberg, he was actually the voice of Teddy, the little teddy bear. And that was kind of the determining factor when we cast him. For the actual recording, I was on hand for all of that. For SUPCOM, it was like 2 weeks. For Forged Alliance, it was about a week. So it was literally like 12-hour days just sitting in there, and it's just a never-ending stream of voice actors. And, just they'd come in, you tell them, hey, the game's about this, your character is this person, and here's your motivation. And they just kind of took it from there.
Do you get many notes from the actors themselves, like, hey, I think it would sound better this way, or do they just pretty much, say what you write?
It depends. There were some who were strictly like, this is the script and this is what I'm going to read. There were some like Jameson Price, who is the voice of Dr. Brackman. That guy's a genius. There is one of my big concerns when I wrote Brackman was the use of "oh yes," because if it came out wrong, he was going to sound like a perv. but the way Jameson did it was that he used that he manipulated his voice in a way so that when he said "oh yes," it was like a verbal representation of him thinking. Like he was trying to come up with what he was going to say next. And he actually really got into it and would, say, well, how about if I move this word here, move that word there? And it's like, sure. And that kind of stuff actually just kind of comes up naturally, because when you write dialogue, the best determinant of whether or not dialogue is good is when it's spoken out loud. And if somebody's trying to perform it and they keep tripping over, a certain phrase, it's, probably in your best interest just to rewrite it. Or sometimes they would kind of verbally rewrite it and just go with what sounded best to them. And then I would take notes and then actually go back into the script and change it to what they said.
So why do you think so many games have really bad writing?
There's a lot of reasons. I mean, the easy answer is because they don't hire writers. And as a writer, there's a certain amount of ego in that. But I think an equal factor is that even if you have a writer, it's still really, really hard. There are so many systems that you have to take into account when you write dialogue. For example, you know, something nobody probably ever thinks about is audio cueing. How does the dialogue stack up? In the case of Supreme Commander, we actually had a cueing engine that, for instance, let's say Brackman was telling you to go do something, and the player had performed an action that resulted in, let's say, a secondary mission opening up, or a new weapon, you know, you've unlocked the experimental, you know, the fat boy or whatever. Instead of, you run the risk of having that second conversation not playing. So you have to kind of measure the conversations and place them properly and allow and have the technology essentially that allows that dialogue to play correctly. And that takes a lot of work. I mean, I literally played Supreme Commander over and over and over. I don't even know how many times I played that game. And then just sending notes to the content engineers and saying, this dialogue's got to move, or it's too long, I got to rewrite it. So it's not like, you know, if you sit down and write a comic book, whatever I write is what I write. And there really aren't any limitations to it. And there are actually a lot of limitations to dialogue in games. And I think that, more than anything, you know, outside of actually hiring people who know how to write, that's probably the biggest factor in the writing not being as good as it could be.
So do you think that the industry as a whole is moving more towards hiring dedicated writers?
From what I hear, yeah. I know the guys over, you know, Valve has three guys now. Microsoft Game Studios has an entire little division with, like, I don't know, four or five writers who work on all their games now. You know, there's me here. There's actually, you know, Steve Bauman works here also. He helps me with the writing. And it's, you know, just from talking to people, you know, generally producers at other companies seem much more interested in hiring writers to both develop the game world, the story, that kind of thing, kind of getting them in a little bit earlier, and then also helping them get through, you know, the dialogue creation process.
For an average, for one of your scripts for a game, during an average playthrough of the entire game, what percentage of your total script do you think is actually heard by the player?
You mean heard or paid attention to?
well, actually heard, because I know there's going to be, you know, different branches and everything that you can go by. And I know an RTS game is going to be different than an adventure game or an RPG in that respect.
I would say in the case of Supreme Commander, I would say probably 80% of it was heard, because the only portions of it that probably weren't heard were related to secondary missions. And those were generally pretty obviously placed. They were very hard to miss. You know, in the case of Forged Alliance, if you're playing as Cybran, and when Doshja dies, if you're playing as Cybran, Brackman tells you to go recover her remains. If you don't do that, you don't get the follow-up dialogue from Brackman. But those kind of instances were pretty rare. For the most part, you know, so like I said, 80-85% of it is heard by the player.
So it's probably very different writing now for an RPG than writing for an RTS.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, it's extremely different because, you know, RTS gamers are a little more content with, you know, you start up a mission and a couple characters banter a little bit, tell you what's going on, and then you go in, you fight, and then they come up with their little reminders. You know, they do their urges, you give you new objectives, things like that. But for the most part, strategy gamers are kind of content just to kind of hear those little bits and then just play and blow stuff up. Whereas RPG gamers, you know, they're more in tune with, you know, they want more story, they want more character interaction, they want more dialogue.
RPGs are much more about narrative.
Yeah, they are.
You know,
I mean, although I think, you know, RTS games can tell stories, it's not the best genre for storytelling in some ways, simply because of the kind of scope and scale of how the game unfolds and you know, things like that. And it's not as intimate. Whereas, you know, obviously in RPG, that is literally you in the game. So it's much more intimate, and it opens up a lot more dialogue possibilities.
So what game in the past couple of years has been your favorite, like the best written game, you know, your own work excluded?
Oh, Bioshock, probably. I mean, I'm actually replaying Bioshock right now, and it's a combination of great writing and great voice acting and direction. Those guys have always done, they've always nailed the audio stuff, which is often overlooked and very important. You know, System Shock 2 is the same way. The audio design in that game was amazing. And you can have the best dialogue in the world, but if the actors can't deliver it or the audio design falls down a little bit, it's not, you know, it's not going to be as good as it should be. And
that's got to be the worst feeling thing as a writer when you've written something that you know is great and the voice acting is subpar.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it can be a challenging. The flip side of that is when, you know, when you write something, you're sitting there and, like, you know, the guy who, Jameson Price, who played Brackman, or the guy who played President Riley in SUPCOM was actually the doctor from Seinfeld. And, like, seeing those guys, like, actually, like, deliver it, and it's like, holy crap, that character is alive now. That, you know, on the downside, it's like, yeah, when the voice acting is not so great, it's kind of like, it hurts. But on the flip side, it's very rewarding when a really good voice actor delivers it.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Bill. Can you hang out with us for the rest of the podcast, or does Chris Taylor need you to get back to work?
I think I'm hidden pretty well, so I can hang out for a little bit longer.
Okay. Cool, because I know there's a lot of inappropriate touching and everything when he comes in and finds you.
I have no comment on that.
His gentle but firm caress of Chris Taylor.
How come we never get those?
Speak for yourself. You've obviously have never been within a 10-foot radius of Chris Taylor.
Right. It's where you harvest the secret sauce.
Oh. Yeah, little too on the nose there, Norm. So moving along, a couple of us have been away. I know I was away last week. I was down in Austin. And Mr. Stapleton, you just recently saw StarCraft II.
I did. I was down in Irvine at Blizzard's brand new campus.
Oh, really? Cool. Tell us about it.
Yeah, they just moved a couple months ago, I think. And they were saying that, or maybe it was weeks, they were saying that most of the people there still didn't know their way around. But great big new campus down there, and they had a bunch of press and a few fans even in to test drive the Zerg, which they just unveiled. They had shown off the Protoss and the Terrans since last year with when they announced the game, and they even let people play that at BlizzCon, which I missed. This was all about the Zerg, so I went down there for a couple days and spent a lot of time actually playing as the Zerg and, you know, largely getting my ass kicked. But there were a couple of guys there from Team Liquid, which is, I guess they play competitively. And those guys were just unreal how good they were, you know, especially never having actually played the game before. But, you know, it is very similar to StarCraft I in most respects. There are a lot of major changes, like the Zerg in particular have you know, evolved quite a bit. My favorite change to the Zerg now is the new Zerg Queen. Before, the Queen was just a high level caster unit that didn't have any actual attacks of her own. She just flew around and, like, you know, put like spy bugs on enemy units so you could see their line of sight and things like that. But now it's you know, much more what you would expect from like a queen insect in a hive, and, you know, she's basically the defender of your base. She can first of all attack both land and air units. She can she builds all of your base defenses. She grows with your hive. So as you upgrade your main base unit building, you can evolve her, and she'll get bigger and stronger, and eventually becomes about as strong as an Ultralisk. And she's just a really powerful unit. She also has some you know special abilities that are great for defending your base. Like she can set or cast a spell that creates a toxic patch of creep, so any enemies in there are being damaged while they're attacking your base, and things like that. And she can also instantly heal any structure for a couple hundred hit points to you know keep it alive a little bit longer.
Wow, is there nothing she can't do?
She is Zerg. Hear her roar.
Yeah.
So if you start off playing as a Zerg, you automatically get the Queen, right?
Almost. And you get her. What you have to build your spawning pool, which is the thing you need to build Zerglings. And then,
oh well, of course.
And then you can. Hey, everybody but you knows about StarCraft.
Stop! Shh! It's my secret. It's my secret shame.
Yeah, you're more of a CNC guy, we know. But so you build your spawning pool, and then you can build her directly from the hive. So it's a little bit different. She's the only unit that isn't hatched from an egg. So it's a little bit different. But yeah, it was a lot of fun down there. I got to actually play a game with the lead designer, Dustin Browder, who was you know not playing at his best there. He kept putting his disclaimer on it, because he wasn't spending his money as fast as he should have, and he was on my team, so it was me and him versus a few other guys, and it was a 2v2v2 we played, so three teams of two, and we took out one of the other teams before I actually dropped the ball on my base defense and got overrun, and he tried to save me, but I was too far gone to help.
Do they still have that display case down there that's just full of like all the different StarCraft themed products that are released in Korea?
Yeah, like Frito-Lays and
yeah,
flip-flops.
They do, yeah. And... yeah, I've seen that several times. They also still have the giant statue of the Ghost from StarCraft Ghost, which never came out. Yeah. They just have pretty much a whole museum of StarCraft stuff. StarCraft and Warcraft, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a lot larger than the last time I was down there.
Yeah, it's several buildings. It's really quite large.
Wow. So they must be working on more than just StarCraft 2.
Well, it houses all their WoW people, too.
Yeah, that's true.
They're working on Lich King.
I guess they need a small army to take care of that.
Right. Sorry, what were you saying, Kristen?
Nothing, I was making a joke. I'm over it now.
So yeah, we'll be doing a full preview on my Zerg hands-on in the next issue. So keep an eye out for that.
Is that the June issue?
That is the June issue.
Oh, awesome!
Did they give any indication when that game is going to come out?
They're still saying 2008. So probably Christmas would be my guess.
Cool. December 31st. Comes
out. 11:59 p.m.
Yep. I know, exactly. But Bill, we'll all be lined up. It's like, it's New Year's Eve. No, it's not. I don't care.
Bill, are you looking forward to StarCraft?
I am. I mean, the thing that Blizzard does very well is, I was actually watching the all those Zerg gameplay movies yesterday, and the thing they do very well is, creating kind of iconic characters. It's, when you see a Zergling, you know exactly what it is. When you see a Protoss, you know what it is. And they're really, really good at that. And I think that's contributed a great deal to their success.
Yeah, their art design is really brilliant. And they managed to do it without really pushing hardware requirements. That was one of the things that the hardcore players that were there were asking was, what is the system requirements going to be? And they are not yet ready to talk about that, not because it's going to be outrageously high and they don't want to piss people off ahead of time, but because they're still trying to get it as low as they can, so it's they're trying to get it super low, but they don't want to promise too low, and they don't want to say something now and then have it be lower later and cost themselves make people think they're not going to be able to play it. So it's their philosophy is it's better just to wait until they know to tell.
Dan, were there any other new units for the Zerg besides the Queen that you were particularly excited about?
There are. There's a unit called the Roach, which is a basic level unit, and it's a kind of a buffer Zergling in a lot of ways. I guess the main thing about it is it can heal very quickly, so. You can put them in the front lines, and as they get damaged, especially if you have the Burrow ability researched, you can, if they get damaged, you can burrow them and they'll heal up. And then you reemerge them and they're ready to fight again. Also, they heal so quickly that if, like, just one Marine is shooting at them, it'll heal faster than the Marine hurts them. So they can, especially if used properly, they can soak up a lot of damage. One of the uses that was recommended to me by the lead designer was to put a line of them in front of a group of Hydralisks, so they'll soak up all the damage for the would otherwise be hitting the Hydralisk, and the Hydralisk is shooting through them and doing all kinds of damage.
Nice.
And cool. And also the Infestor is another one of my favorites. It's a unit that can burrow and it can burrow and then move while burrowed. And you can get it into the enemy base, and then it can infect any enemy building with, you know, it basically sprays Zerg juice on it, and it starts pumping out infected Marines. So you basically can create your resource raiding force in their base, which is a really nasty move. I had a lot of fun with that.
I can't wait for that.
Well, I didn't get to go to Blizzard, unfortunately, but I did get to go down to Austin for a few days to go to South by Southwest for their interactive portion festival. It's called Screenburn. There wasn't too much going on down there for that, unfortunately. They did have Dell was there, HP was there, Wizards of the Coast was there, CDV was there, and of course there was a big game tournament going on at the same time. There wasn't too much that we actually haven't seen before. The other event that was going on down there was Gamecock's EIEIO event, and they were showing off 9 different games, many of which are coming out for the PC, and I got to play Legendary the Box, formerly called Legendary the Box, now just called Legendary on PC, and I think I was the only guy who actually got to play it on PC because they had to actually go find the PC first to install the code on for me.
Nice.
And then they had to set it up so that, like, we're in this trailer. It's a trailer that's made specifically for playing console games. So that you have a bench on one side, and then you have the game screens on the other. So there I'm sitting there, and I've got the keyboard on my lap, and I've got a mouse on my notebook next to me, you know, sitting on the seat next to me. I'm trying to control it that way, and I was able to get through the level okay. If you don't know what Legendary is about, basically a guy gets a hold of Pandora's box, accidentally opens it, and unleashes all sorts of monsters on the earth, like minotaurs and werewolves and
griffins.
Yeah, griffins and stuff like that.
Just your average Thursday at PC Gamer.
Yeah, pretty much. So that was interesting. It uses the Unreal Engine 3 engine, which I've seen it look better than I would say in this game, and it is still a ways out. It's not coming out until later this year, much later this year, towards the end. The AI, though, looked pretty interesting because the monsters actually use all of the objects in the environment. So say there's a stone bench in front of you, you know, you can try and break it and use it yourself, or a monster may come over and just pick it up and chuck it right at you. And, of course, they're also crawling all over the walls, the buildings. They can break objects in the environment, so they may actually go and break through a wall or something. So that's kind of cool. That's a pretty interesting part of it. And you'll also be able to read more of my impressions in our June issue. Pimp, pimp, pimp.
And we should also acknowledge that they did, you know, it was nice that they took off the box from the name.
Well,
somehow less is more.
Well, the thing is that, you know, once you understand what the story is, it's like, oh, okay, I know what you're talking about. But otherwise, when I first heard the title, it's like Legendary the Box.
It's like hitting a speed bump.
Yeah, it's a little weird. Another interesting game that I saw down there was called Velvet Assassin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Previously known as Sabotage.
Yeah, I'm not sure which title I like better, although I guess Velvet Assassin Velvet Assassin kind of makes it sound like one of those mid-90s like sex games.
Yeah, it's the best title ever.
Sounds like Skinamax.
I know. It sounds like a movie that you'd watch about 11 p.m. on Friday night on Cinemax. Next on Cinemax, Velvet Assassin.
Oh, hot.
She's deadly. She's sultry and she hits.
She's made of velvet.
She's Kirstie Alley.
Oh, Lord. Yeah.
Far.
What's that game about? There's actually a serious side to the game, it turns out. is that it's actually based on this real French saboteur. She was an assassin, a French assassin back in World War II. And it's basically like a Splinter Cell type game, and there's a lot of stealth to it. Set in World War II, and some of the missions are not quite so touchy-feely as you would hope. Like the one mission that they showed me was that you break into this German prison, and three French fellow spies have been detained. They've been captured by the Germans. And so you think, okay, great, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to set my buddies free, especially since as I'm going through the prison, I'm actually like slitting the throats of the German guards who are there. Well, no, it turns out that what your mission is to actually deliver cyanide pills to them. So they can kill themselves before they are tortured into revealing any information.
Nice. And
you'd think if you go to all the trouble of killing all the guards.
Well, that's what I was thinking, but you know, I guess
getting
it's like,
in is easy. Getting out is the hard part.
Yeah.
Here's a question: instead of giving them the cyanide pills, why don't you just kill them?
Yeah. Good question.
Because that would ruin your outfit.
Yeah. maybe so that you don't have the guilt of killing them. You know, you can kill Germans, but you don't want to kill your own compatriots.
That's so wimpy.
Do you know how hard it is to get blood out of velvet?
Hey, that's a valid point.
That is a valid point, yeah. Yeah. Although, I mean, she is slitting the throat of every German she sees, so...
Germans don't have blood.
Oh. Well, that's true, because if you play the game in Germany, it's either going to be green gook or it's going to be some sort of oil, because they're actually robots.
Right, right.
So the big news for this week, it looks like, is that EA's hostile takeover attempt of Take-Two has prompted Take-Two to reveal a few secrets that they may not have normally given out. Namely,
surprise,
that
right.
BioShock 2 has officially been announced. It's going to be developed by a brand new developer, 2K Marin, which is just right around here. And Ken Levine is going to be serving as an advisor for the game because he is still at 2K Boston.
So 2K Marin, it's a new studio, but it's made up of a couple of guys from 2K Boston or from
right.
Irrational
yeah,
Games.
They had a few people that are Irrational / 2K Boston vets.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have been concerned, like, you know, well, what have they done? And it's like, well, these are some of the same people who actually made the first BioShock game.
That's right.
Yes, yeah, some, but not all. And it should be noted that this is not the same, like the entire same team. That there were rumors, like when 2K Marin was formed, maybe 4 or 5 months ago. There was this entire defection of 2K Boston team members that just wanted to get away from Ken Levine or something like that, which was totally untrue. It was just a couple of guys that left because they wanted a promotion to start start up a new studio and be kind of the head to that. So
I know there were some nasty rumors going online saying that Ken Levine was apparently difficult to work with or something like that. Although every time I've met him, he's been absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
And he made Freedom 4, so I will always love him.
But it's coming out in 2009, so that's pretty soon. I mean, they wouldn't have more than 2 years to work on it. Do you think we can expect a huge change, or do you think you're going to use a lot of the same assets, maybe even some of the same levels, and just tell a different story?
I mean, 2009, I mean, it has to have been in development for quite some time already, at least conceptually.
Think so?
I think
conceptually,
so.
Conceptually, I would agree.
Right now, we don't even know what the setting is actually going to be. I mean, because if they followed, for example, the System Shock model, it could have a vastly different setting.
That's what I'm hoping.
It could be a prequel. It could be anything.
Guys want to see from BioShock 2? Well,
I don't want to see a prequel.
No?
You don't want to see a prequel?
I don't.
I don't want to see it set.
The problem with that is, where do you go? We all sort of know how BioShock ends, so.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but I mean, you know a bunch of stuff about like historical movies that are often quite good, even though you know how it turns out. I mean, if they come up with a compelling story, then I would have no problem with going back to Rapture because I like that environment a lot. Of course, they would have to do something new and exciting with it, but I like it.
I hope they go back to Rapture myself. I mean, I think that they could still. Well, that would be one easy way to turn it around so quickly, is that so many of the hard assets would already have been done, assuming that they would be using the same engine. What I would like to see from the game, though, is that there are more role-playing options this time around, that, your choices with the Little Sisters, if the Little Sisters come back, actually have more of, they make more of a difference in the gameplay.
Right. Yeah, I'd just like to say I don't specifically, want to go back to Rapture. I would have no problem with it. But I mean, if they have something, equally good, I'm all for that too. But if they can do, I would be happy either way. That way.
I want an adventure game set in Rapture before, it went crazy.
I think you're crazy.
Before
that's
it went
interesting.
Crazy.
Well, during the masquerade party and interacting with the people.
So you want to see what happened on New Year's Eve?
That's right. Yes.
I must have been
I actually I wouldn't have a problem with that because I think, personally, unless you went through and you listened to each and every audio tape and was just devouring every bit of dialogue, a lot of people probably didn't quite understand exactly what happened. So I could see them doing that.
Making an adventure game?
Not the adventure game portion, but going back and making it a bit of a prequel so that it at least answered some of those questions that you may have had about the first game.
The biggest personality in the game is Andrew Ryan, and you have no personality. And they kind of, with the ending of the game, the main character's story, who you play, kind of concludes. So that aside from Rapture, it's Andrew Ryan that really holds that. Theoretically would hold the series together.
Well, but I mean, though you don't know that because, at the end of the story, not leaving any spoilers, it does kind of jump ahead. So there is some leeway there.
I just think that going back to like the immediate past for a prequel would be kind of a bad idea just because there's really no opportunity in there for a heroic story of any kind or even an anti-hero story.
That's what I meant when I said I was not looking forward to a prequel. I don't want to know what happened just before.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they do a prequel, they should go back further than that. Maybe to the founding of Rapture, something like that. But not like the immediate past to the story we already know.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Well, what would you like to see in a sequel?
In a sequel or a prequel?
In a sequel.
Rapture was kind of...
The adventure of the little girl.
This time you're playing as a little sister all grown up.
But the little sisters don't grow up.
You're a big sister.
Yeah, you're a big sister.
Little sister in big daddy outfit. Yeah. I guess you could go back to Rapture, but it wouldn't have the same like living, breathing world feel that it did before because it's pretty much been destroyed.
Oh, it's like Oz, Return to Oz.
But, yeah, I'm sure you'll find out that there was like Rapture 2, he built two of them at the same time.
It's like the Jurassic Park sequels.
Right, well, exactly.
This time it's not, it's a different philosophy. It's communism or something.
Right. They all share the atom. I guess the one thing that I thought was really missing from BioShock, like if they did do like a sequel in Rapture, I would like to see a level that takes place like outside the city, like underwater.
Or if everything froze, they could call it BioShock.
I thought if you are in an underwater city, I think that not having a level that's in water is kind of a missed opportunity.
That's almost
sorry,
like saying
Logan
if you're
just
in
made
a
it funny.
That was totally funny.
That was really funny.
I didn't hear it because I was talking at the time.
So anyway, moving along.
still laughing.
Well, that's one of you. But anyway, so if you were one of those people who was really pissed off because when the Orange Box came out, you had to buy the entire Orange Box, including the original Half-Life, in order to get it. Well, good news. You can finally buy individual parts of the Orange Box at retail. Valve has just announced that it's going to be selling Team Fortress 2, Portal, and Half-Life 2 Episode 1 and 2 in separate packs. So Team Fortress 2 is, let's see, they're all going to be coming out April 9th, and I believe that the prices are going to be ranging from $19.99 to $29.99.
Yeah, so I think it's the same price as if you buy them on Steam, except Episode 1 and 2 will be cheaper since you'll get both 1 and 2 for $30. What I don't know is, I mean, the biggest limiting factor for people not... The reason people don't buy it on Steam is because they don't have an internet connection. If you buy it retail, will you still need an internet connection to authorize?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, from everything we understand about what Valve has said in the past, yes, it's going to come with Steam. It's still going to require you to install Steam on your system.
The difference is you won't have to spend, you know, all the time to download several gigabytes worth of game files. Plus you have the disc and the manual that people... You know, seem to have an attachment to.
And another interesting thing about this is that EA is not co-publishing it with them this time. It looks like Valve is publishing these completely by themselves.
Yeah, and they must have had an agreement with EA where they only agreed to publish or to co-publish Orange Box, not the individual parts. But it's kind of a sneaky move on Valve's part.
Well, I don't know if that's so much sneaky. I mean, it's certainly, you know, good for them. I mean, more profit for them.
I don't know. It seems like if they had thought of it initially, or if they wanted to do it initially, wouldn't they have just wouldn't EA have wanted to publish them individually?
I think they definitely would have wanted to. And you know, I think we talked about it in an earlier podcast whether Left 4 Dead would be published by EA or whether Valve would publish it on their own. I think Left 4 Dead is a part of the EA Valve deal because I remember the last EA day that we went to play their games before Orange Box came out, they had Left 4 Dead there.
That's true. Yeah, I'm not sure if there's a deal in place for that one or not.
Well, speaking of Steam, the Atari lineup of games has now been added to Steam's repertoire. So if you have been looking for an easy way to buy Act of War, Direct Action, Arma, Death of Spies, Indigo Prophecy, Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, Tycoon City New York. They are all available right now on Steam.
They have Neverwinter Nights too, don't they?
I'm sure they do, yeah.
I'm sure I saw that.
Neverwinter Nights 2 too?
Well, yeah, Neverwinter Nights 2 is coming soon, according to this story. So not yet. The Witcher will also be coming to Steam soon.
Sweet.
And if you haven't played Indigo Prophecy yet, you should really get on that.
Yeah, yeah. I already bought it. I haven't played it yet, but I was like, yes,
oh,
I can
it's
play.
It's fantastic, yeah.
And so rounding out our news section is a little bad news, a little good news. The good news, potentially, is that it looks like Interplay is one step closer to making a comeback. At least if you go to Interplay's website, interplay.com, you will see that there is a brand new graphic there, and it says coming soon.
Is that necessarily a good thing, though?
Well, it depends on what they're coming soon with.
Right. I don't know, because I mean, you had Interplay before where they had a bunch of great games, but they mismanaged them so badly that they went all but under. I mean, is it a good thing when a company like that comes back?
It's only a good thing, I think, if maybe they're coming back in order to either franchise, some of their past hits, you know, maybe to make partnerships with other companies or something, so that you know we can enjoy some old games again. You know,
well, at least they updated their website, which is an important thing.
that's the good part.
Well, they updated their website with a coming soon thing, which I mean,
coming soon. Yes.
How many websites out there have had that coming soon graphic up there for years? You know,
And as we talked about before, they still own the rights to the Fallout MMO.
Well, they don't own anything. They sold the rights to Bethesda.
But they retained those rights, though.
No, Bethesda licensed it back to them.
Ah, okay.
So and it's kind of like the same situation with Apple Computer and Apple Records, where Apple Computer was initially licensing the name Apple, and there were all kinds of disputes between the two. And then Apple bought the name and licensed it back to Apple Records. So,
because Apple promised they would never get into the music business,
right.
And then they did.
But that was, and in order to resolve that dispute, they just paid out for the name. And so with Fallout, Bethesda had initially licensed the property, but then I guess Interplay wanted more money out of it, so they just sold the rights to Interplay entirely.
Bethesda entirely.
Interplay wanted to keep, they have their Fallout MMO that they are allegedly working on. They wanted to keep working on that, so Bethesda licensed back, as a part of the agreement, they licensed back the rights for the MMO. Now, Bethesda retains approval rights on that, so if Interplay wanted to, shove some piece of crap Fallout game out the door, Bethesda could say no, that's not up to our standards. Which is a great setup, I think, is just because it keeps them from doing anything desperate, just to get a game on the market.
But Interplay is doing something soon.
They are doing something.
if only relaunching their website. And in the bad part is that Epic continues to distance itself from the PC by announcing that Unreal Engine 4 is going to be developed with consoles in mind. Namely, the 360, the PS3,
well, not the 360.
Whatever Nintendo's next generation is.
So what Tim Sweeney, the lead programmer at Epic, said was they're designing their next engine, which is, it's still definitely a work in progress. Unreal Engine 3 is really strong right now. But they're designing it with the next-gen consoles in mind. So not the 360 or PS3, but what Microsoft and Sony may have coming out after that. And then the Wii, whatever Nintendo would come out after the Wii. They did mention PC, but they said PC would only... It would be like their fourth.
That would be like last, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't see that as just a huge problem anymore, just because there are a bunch of competing engines. There's the CryEngine 2, which is amazing. There is... And Valve is almost certainly working on something. And they have to be.
Or they'll iterate Source forever until they can't
iterate Source forever.
Gabe Newell has said that they will iterate Source until they reach a point where they have to change the basic infrastructure of their code,
right?
To accommodate new technologies, which they don't foresee in in the near future.
Really?
Yeah.
Because it seems like Source is showing its age quite a bit.
Well, they had actually said that for a while. I mean, every new Valve game has a new iteration of Source in it.
Right.
So they're constantly adding on to it,
but I mean,
it looks great.
You compare Portal to Call of Duty, or you compare Episode 2 to Call of Duty, and it looks good, but not as good.
No, I think it looks fine, and most of the Call of Duty pizzazz comes from post processing effects, which they could easily add on to Source.
Oh, and maybe I don't think that Episode 2 looked as good as the current generation of Unreal 3 games.
Call of Duty wasn't Unreal 3 either.
Well, yeah, but that was just an example.
Right.
And plus, now that we have CryEngine 2 and the Far Cry 2 engine, I think those look superior now anyway.
I think there are going to be plenty of engines to choose from on the PC. I guess the one problem is that it does make things more difficult to port. But as long as Epic is still planning to support the PC, even if it is playing fourth fiddle, it at least gets they'll at least have support on the PC, so they will be able to port it over.
Well, that's probably what they're talking about. Like whenever Gears of War 3 comes out, they'll have it for the new Xbox first, and then 6 months or a year later or whatever, then it'll come out for PC.
Right.
I mean, Unreal Engine 3 also has been optimized, I think, for the consoles more than the PC, because a lot of the games, when they appear on PC, you know, have unreasonably high system requirements or just don't look as great as console counterparts.
Well, they look the same as the console counterparts.
Not always. I mean, like the you know, Splinter Cell. I mean, the early Unreal Engine 3 games.
I think you're right. Norbert, they didn't have.
There's no anti-aliasing support, and they, you know, the old ones didn't have widescreen, and some other minor details.
Okay, well, let's move on to our playlist for the week then. Kristen, what have you been playing?
Penumbra, Black Plague, which
sounds
is the second. It does, doesn't it? Hello, Penumbra. It's the second in the, I think, what's meant to be a trilogy, if I recall, of the Penumbra game. So I reviewed the first one for us a few months back, and it's basically sort of a survival horror adventure game. The thing that's really interesting about it is it has a real-time physics engine. So, which, you know, I'm feeling the same way about that I felt in the first game, in that it's kind of an interesting conceit. But after a while, like, I just don't want to have to pull every drawer open by dragging the mouse or every door. You know what I mean? Like,
it's like cleaning a room.
It kind of is. It is a little bit. And then the one good thing so far, and, you know, I haven't finished the game yet, but the one thing that really bothered me about that in the first game is that combat, there wasn't very much of it, but it was really difficult, because if you needed to, like, slash something with a knife, you needed to actually, like, move the mouse up and down, which, of course, caused your point of view to move. So it was always, like, wildly swinging a knife all over the place every time I was trying to, like, you know, every time I was trying to kill something. And that doesn't seem to be going on this time. So we'll see. It's skitty. It's fitty skitty.
Logan, how about you?
I just finished Rainbow Six Vegas last night, the original one, so I am all ready for Vegas 2, waiting for it to arrive.
Which unfortunately it just got delayed. April 15th now.
And the other one I was waiting for was Assassin's Creed, which I actually want to play, and now they've both been delayed. So whichever one comes in first is what I'll jump on next, but in the meantime I'm gonna try Gra 2, which I didn't play when that came out either, so.
What was the official date for Assassin's Creed now, the 8th?
I think it was the 8th, yes.
Okay. So it's not that long away. We'll be fine.
No. You'll live. Let's see some boxed copies, people. Come on.
Dan, what have you been playing?
Just for the hell of it, I was feeling like in a Star Trek mood. I had been rewatching Deep Space Nine.
Why are you not in a Star Trek mood?
I was just going to say the same thing.
I am not always in a Star Trek mood. Like, I had not watched any Star Trek in, like, a year. So,
don't you love Voyager? Oh.
I was just rewatching DS9, and you know, I got in a Star Trek mood, so I actually went and replayed Star Trek Legacy, which, you know, was not that great a game. It's not the worst game in the world either, though. So, and it was that is a game that has some terrible writing and terrible, and the voice acting is pretty bad too. They got all five captains, from all the shows together. I got the impression that this was like the first time they'd ever read the script, just because their intonations as they were reading the lines, like they would pause, like, you know, next line, or like turn page, you know, at just unnatural points in the script. Also, the writing was just terrible. They kept using the phrase, you know, let's crack this nut, it's a tough nut to crack, you know, that kind of thing. You should not use that phrase more than once in anything.
And that was actually written by a Star Trek author. Like, wasn't it DC Fontana or something?
I think she had a hand in it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's surprising.
Totally phoned in. and, you know, the gameplay is also very basic, but it sometimes looked pretty, as long as you weren't blowing up something big, because if you blew up something big, it just, like, kind of shattered into really big, clunky pieces that was really ugly. But ships blowing each other up was okay. It satisfied my craving for a little while.
So on the shit to brilliant scale, then, Did you say that shit or brilliant?
It is closer to the shit end of the shit brilliant scale. Yes.
Ah, okay.
It's kind of hard when you play a lot of games. You kind of pile a lot of them on the low end of the scale just because you've played so many that only the great ones stand out. But you know, I try to remember that a lot of the games are they're somewhere in the middle. They're not terrible, but they're not good or great. You know, it's a good way to kill some time.
Norm, what have you been playing?
Ooh, something that's not a good way to kill some time. Turning Point, Fall of Liberty.
Oh,
all 3 hours of it.
Oh,
but
well, so that's like sort of the silver lining, right? It's a bad game, but it's a short bad game.
Yeah, yeah. The pain is over quickly. And then of course Team Fortress 2 and Sins of a Solar Empire. I swear, no more games until 5 a.m. I swear.
So you're not going to start a game until 5 a.m.
No more games that last until 5 a.m.
No more games starting at like midnight and going until 5 a.m.
Yeah.
That is a bad idea. Although version 1.03 just came out. So Norm and I, we played a game yesterday that against the AI. That was a pretty fun time, wouldn't you say, Norm?
I would say that was indeed a fun time.
Although I don't know if the AI got better or worse. It could just be because they have different like specializations for the AIs. They've got aggressive AI or a research AI or an economic AI, and we just typically set it to random hard AI. So one of them was much more formidable than the other. So, but they made a lot of tweaks to the AI. It needs more search and more research to determine how good it is.
Hey, Bill, are you still there?
Indeed, I am listening intently.
What have you been playing this week, sir?
Actually, in the past week, First Lieutenant Bat Gecko has retired from Battlefield 2 after nearly 600 hours of service.
Oh my God!
What do you mean retired?
Yeah, I had to give it up.
By court order or
by wife order?
Oh no, that's more binding.
What was the final straw that made her put her foot down?
The gaming computer is also doubles as her computer, and she has stuff to do.
So
when she belongs to a few like charitable organizations that she does work for, and when she's trying to do stuff for those, and your argument against her doing that is, I need to try to hit second lieutenant. It's not very compelling.
Bill, so can't you just get her a laptop?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to end up doing, is just getting her a laptop, and then I'll have that sweet... You know, she has like a dual-core 8800 GTX. You know, it's a totally, awesome machine, and she uses it for Excel. But beyond that, I actually, like I said earlier, I started replaying BioShock, and I'll slowly work my way back through that. And I've also... here and there, like around midnight or so, I'll jump on TF2 for like an hour or so.
You should have been on our server.
Yeah. I played as a spy a lot when it first came out, and I was, imagine that, pretty good at sneaking up on people and giving them the shiv. But everybody, since I didn't play, for a couple months, everybody's way better, so now I'm just, playing. I generally play as like a soldier, that way I can just kind of hang back and lob rockets at people. But it's fun.
Indeed. Andy, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Team Fortress 2 with everybody on the server pretty regularly, a couple hours each night. And then Sins of the Solar Empire, I try to play at least once a week, if not more than that. That's a good game. I like how you can toggle pirates on and off now in the new patch.
You don't like the pirates?
Not so much. I don't know why.
They're so fun, and if nothing else, even if they do get sent after you, just use them to level up your capital ships.
It is true, they aren't that hard. So, and also I've been playing Sam and Max season 2, so I'm trying to get that.
Oh,
I'm excited. I'm going on a plane tomorrow to Boston, and I'm planning on playing through a full episode, probably episode 2 of season 2.
How long is your flight?
4 hours, I think.
Okay, you might just make it then.
Yeah. It'll be my first in-flight gaming experience, so I'm excited.
What kind of laptop do you have? What kind of laptop battery do you have?
Oh, it's kind of a big one. It's like an HP, and it's got a beefy extra laptop battery.
Oh, you got the extra battery. That's handy. Is it one of those that lets you hot swap the battery?
I don't know. I've never tried.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty new thing.
Do that.
I think it was just a new thing that I read about somewhere.
Mm. No, yeah, I haven't seen one of those. That's awesome.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Well, for my part, what with traveling and then being sick the last couple of days, I have not actually been gaming too much. I had that sort of sickness where I would just lie on the couch and I could barely muster the muster my strength to switch from Oprah, and so much less actually pick up like a game controller or drag myself over to my PC. But I have been playing Dream Pinball 3D. I've been playing some more of that, some more of 7MX Season 2 Episode 3, and the games that I've been playing some of the betas for work, like Legendary, and also Advance Wars Days of Ruin on my Nintendo DS. I guess that is about it for this week's podcast. Thank you very much to Bill Harms for joining us this week.
Yeah, it was a good time. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Hope to have you back again sometime. And for all of us, that is it for this week. If you would like to send us a question, Andy, can you tell people where to call?
Sure. If you want to call the toll-free number, it's 1-877-404-1337. And the extension is
724.
724 is the extension there. So.
And if you would like to subscribe to PC Gamer and get this fine magazine in its physical paper format, please go to www.pcgamer.com/subscribe and then send us money. Just send it to me. Anyway, hope everybody's having a great week. That's it for us for this week. For myself, for Kristen, Logan, Dan, Norman, Andy, and Bill, this is the week of March somethingeth.
Okay, bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Okay,
thanks,
bye.
Mike.
I have no closing. I don't know, you go down to the third floor, it's a completely different world.
It is. It's like an alien planet.
There's dinosaurs down there and mist.
Dinosaurs. I can only hope to one day be engulfed in the flames of an exploding laptop.
Got a full house today.
Yeah, who are all these people?
Oh, it's Bill Harms.
Dun dun dun.
These are some good little Japanese crackers.
Okay, first up, Japanese crackers.
What did you just call Norm?
See, there's a movie coming out called Super Jaime.
No.
A guy lives 30 days without smoking pot, has medical tests done, and then he lives 30 days smoking pot all day.
Huh?
What?
It's like Super Size Me, except instead of eating McDonald's.
I thought you were saying something unpleasant.
Yeah, me too. Never mind.
I thought you. I'm not gonna be the one to say it.
I thought this was gonna be a racially insensitive superhero.
Yeah.
Film.